Okay, so kind of a big day today, I guess I would say, compared to other days recently. Good news today! And I'm going to give you the preview of the news in just a second, but I will say, for those of you watching this who know what is going on today in the news, who, like me, woke up to a notification, like Edwin woke up to a notification and saw, hey, good news for once, let's bask in it, let's enjoy it, because it's about to get dirty. And I won't even say that really the last couple of hours have been totally clean. Like, already the news has been really dirty in regards to Bernie Sanders, which we'll get to. Obviously, he's running for president. You probably already know that. But it is going to descend into some deep layers of the muck that we haven't seen. We got a preview in 2016. It's going to get dirtier. We're going to be talking about that, obviously. Bernie Sanders, his candidacy, his platform, and also some of the issues that he will face. Not necessarily the actual issues he'll face. We will be delving into those. But immediately, all of the hot takes of the issues pundits say he will face. I would say the issues pundits want him to face. We'll be breaking those down, too. Also, Amy Klobuchar got a town hall with CNN last night. We'll be showing some videos from that. And through the course of today, we will have two awesome guests. A little bit later on, Emma Vigeland from Rebel HQ will be joining us. We'll be talking about Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, and also Roger Stone's developing legal issues thanks to his social media activity. And also, Erica Andiola, the chief advocacy officer for Rice's in Texas, is going to be on to talk about a recent death in Border Patrol custody, as well as some of the developments on the family separation policy of the Trump administration. So, gigantic show. Why don't we launch right into it? And just like that, Bernie Sanders is running, and he launched a video on Twitter. Here is what he had to say.
Real change never takes place from the top on down, but always from the bottom on up.
Bernie Sanders' healthcare for all idea is gaining steam.
Free tuition, free college tuition, free tuition champion, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders added, the greatest threat to national security is climate change.
The future of our planet is at stake.
Sanders taking on Amazon.
Bernie Sanders has been consistent hammering about income inequality.
Nobody in America works 40 hours a week, should be living in poverty.
Brothers and sisters, we have a lot of work in front of us.
If we are prepared to stand together, there is no end to what the great people of our nation can accomplish.
So that is an awesome launch video. I mean, it describes not only what he stands for, which is important, and not every candidate has really done much of that just yet, but more importantly than that, it shows what he has done. Because back in 2016, one of the big narratives against Bernie Sanders was, yeah, he has ideas, I guess, but is he really a leader in Congress? I don't know who that was intended to be, that accent. But they said it. And he wanted to point out that not only has he helped to shift the debate on virtually every one of the most important, most debated, most consequential issues inside of the Democratic Party right now, but he has been a leader on making sure that we achieve things in those regards. So Bernie Sanders hasn't necessarily at the federal level been able to get enough Democrats and Republicans to sign on to his great ideas, although that's becoming more and more of a thing with every passing day. But he has been out there over the years fighting for these at the state, local level, even lower than that, going to particular companies and helping that they showed in that video with Disney, helping their workers and advocating in terms of Amazon and Walmart and notching big wins last year, many times with the aid of Ro Khanna as well. So he has not been limited to just advocating, not even just pushing legislation inside of the Senate. He has been out there as an actual leader, not just a thought leader, not just a debate or a rhetorical leader, but an actual leader on making sure that the working class has a champion, and he has been that champion. And he enters his second run for the presidency as that champion. As many people have pointed out, he is, I think, by every standard, the front runner. There are others who are considered that they would have a great chance. You know, if Biden were to launch, he's, you know, a well-known quantity, he'll do quite well, all of that stuff. But coming out of 2016 and coming out of his many wins since then, he is the guy to watch. And we're about to get into what he's going to be running on. But before we start breaking down the specifics, I want to show a section of his first interview as a candidate where he talks about what needs to lie underneath any particular policy position here.
We're going to win. We are going to also launch what I think is unprecedented in modern American history, and that is a grassroots movement, John, to lay the groundwork for transforming the economic and political life of this country. That's what's different.
And that's your theory, which is that without the groundswell, without the grassroots, you can't change the politics.
That's exactly right. Look, John, somebody can come before you and say, look, I want to do A and I want to do B, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, the only way that real change takes place is when millions of people stand up, fight back, and say, enough is enough. We're going to have a government that works for all of us, not just the few.
Okay, so look, if you pay attention to Bernie Sanders, if you listen to his speeches, if you follow him on social media and all that, nothing that he said there is going to surprise you. But it is sort of the foundation for his theory that a political revolution is needed, and that to get progress on the most important issues, whether, you know, economic or environmental or whatever, you're going to need to make some fundamental changes. And what I love about that is I think the American population is even more ready for that sort of approach than they were the last time around. And every day that we're talking about issues like the Green New Deal, they become more ready for that. Because the sort of foundational argument underlying the Green New Deal as the approach that we need towards climate change is the same as Bernie Sanders' approach towards politics. People often look at the Green New Deal and say, well, why does it have stuff about money and politics? What does that have to do with climate change? But the issue is, if you want to actually fix the national global issue of climate change, you're going to need to do what is necessary to get that legislation passed, which means foundational change to our political and economic system to allow it to happen. So long as the most influential, wealthiest donors are in charge of things, you're not going to have progress. And it's not that you're just going to not have progress on one issue. It is all of the issues that threaten those vested interests in this particular case. And so he understands that in a wider political sense, in the same way that it's being applied to the Green New Deal. So what will his platform be? A lot of it's going to be sort of the big hits of Bernie Sanders. It's not going to shock many of you. But according to Jeff Stein of the Washington Post, his aides are saying Medicare for all, they list as the first. Green New Deal in dealing with climate change. He has long been one of the most outspoken politicians on climate change back during the 2016 election, despite the fact that no one else wanted to talk about it. The debates didn't have questions about it and all of that. $15 minimum wage, something he's been fighting for some time. Criminal justice reform, free public college. They're just saying free college, but it's probably the plan that we're familiar with. Breaking up the biggest banks, part of his advocacy against Wall Street that he has been maintaining since the Great Recession of a decade ago. Gender pay equity, paid leave, lowering prescription drug prices, expanding Social Security, saving unions, the DREAM Act, a number of these issues. We also have background checks and assault weapons ban, affordable housing, new infrastructure, and continuing his opposition to the military-industrial complex, both in terms of unnecessary military ventures abroad, but also the ever-rising military budget inside of the U.S., much of it going to military contractors rather than to the actual soldiers themselves. And drilling down a little bit into his criminal justice platform, legalizing marijuana, abolishing private prisons, ending cash bail, and major reform inside of police departments. So, look, you have a lot there. And for someone who we're not familiar with, you might say, well, that just sounds like everything. But the thing is, Bernie Sanders, you know, he's been around for a long time, and some people try to pitch that as a negative, but there are positive consequences to that. And one of the implications of him being around is that we know these are not issues that he picked up today. These are not issues he picked up just for his campaign. These are issues he has been working on for longer than I have been alive. And his position on many of these issues has been consistent for literally decades. So while there are many candidates in this Democratic primary that are going to face very serious questions about how actually committed they are to the things that they're advocating for, especially since in the past they were on the opposite sides of many of these issues, economically in terms of, you know, Medicare for all, environmental issues, things like that, Bernie Sanders does not have that liability, and he doesn't have it to a greater degree than anyone else who is or will run for the Democratic nomination in 2020. That is one of his greatest strengths. It is authenticity grounded in history, and Bernie Sanders has that. No one else does in the same exact way. We have more video of his that I do want to get to, and we will in the near term. I will also say that going forward, the show is going to probably talk about Bernie a good bit, so, you know, buckle up on that one. But we do want to go to our first break, because on the other side of this, we've got Erica Andiola, who's an advocate at Raices, Texas, who's going to be on to talk about family separation policy, a death at the border, the launch of the new push for the wall, all these related issues, gigantic part of the news. After
we need to talk about a relatively new show called The Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of The Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
This. Joining us now on the Damage Report to break down the latest on family separation crisis and other issues at the border is Erica Andiola, Chief Advocacy Officer for Raices Texas. Erica, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you here and to talk about these issues, although I wish we could be talking about more positive news, but this is the country we've got. So not long ago, the Trump administration announced that it would simply be too much work, it would require too much effort to reunite the remaining kids that were separated from their families last year. And they also said that it would be traumatic to the children to do that reuniting process at this point. When you heard that news, you and your organization, how did you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just, you know, again, for me to think about the fact that this administration would actually use children and their safety and their mental, you know, their mental, basically they were traumatized just to be able to make a point politically is completely just, you know, for me, it's just another reminder of what we're dealing with and, you know, in the current Trump administration. And, you know, when they talk about this whole worry that they have that these children are going to, you know, suffer from trauma by, you know, being taken away from their sponsors, basically the people who are able to take them out of, you know, the shelters or the detention centers where they're held, which, you know, it's not their parents. It's basically people who, you know, who sponsor them. They don't want to take them away from them because they think that they're going to suffer some sort of trauma. And it's ridiculous to hear that because just the fact that they were taken away without necessarily, you know, being told what was going to happen with them, it's already a trauma for these kids. And so we're trying our best to try to reunite these families. It's been really hard because unfortunately the government didn't keep track of every child that was taken away from their parents. And so that is, you know, that is the actual crisis that is happening at this moment.
And I also want to mention that you know, back last year when this issue of family separation came up, your organization was one of the ones that did the best work on making sure that not only that those people were taken care of, but that people knew about the severity of the issue. So thank you to your organization for doing that last year.
Yeah.
And I also saw you had tweeted earlier today that apparently the third migrant to die in Border Patrol custody was identified. It was a 45-year-old migrant that died, I believe, just yesterday, actually. And what did you think about that?
Yeah. And this is not the first time. There's been many deaths. And if we remember, you know, there was a child. There's been actually several children also who have died in ICE custody. And many people ask, you know, well, why does it even, how does this happen? You know, how does this even happen? And you know, there's so many reasons. Like people who are coming, of course, they're crossing the desert. There's so much, you know, they're going through so much and, you know, their health is not, it's already not in good conditions. But then what happens is that when they get into the United States, they're basically placed in these places that in Spanish, they call them las hieleras, which is basically an ice box. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, the family has a child, they are still put into this terrible, basically ice boxes. Where people sleep many times for several days without being able to have, you know, the adequate clothing, blankets, anything to be able to keep them warm, to be able to have the right food, basic human needs. They're not able to be met. And so we have seen that children who come out of those conditions end up dying. Several have already died. And you know, this recent death that just happened in the hands of Border Patrol. And so, you know, like I said, it's unfortunate that this administration is actually focused on building a wall, when in reality, the majority of migrants who are coming into the United States are presenting themselves. They're not crossing illegally. They're literally presenting themselves saying, I need help. I need to stay in this country or else I'm going to get killed in Honduras or Guatemala or where, you know, wherever they're coming from. Or, you know, I'm going to die. Something's going to happen to me. And so they're knocking at our doors and we're basically just receiving them with this type of conditions and with this just stupid, you know, wall that this president wants to build.
And so why don't we turn to that? Just a couple of days ago, Donald Trump declared a national emergency at the border. So is there a national emergency at the border? And if so, is it of the nature that he described?
Let me tell you what the actual emergency is happening. And I don't want to use the word emergency because there's so many things in this country that could be an emergency, like climate change. You know, like a lot of the things that are happening in the streets with people getting shot just for being Black or being Latino. I mean, there's so many things that could be an emergency in this country and that's never being paid attention to. Yet we have, you know, there is a crisis. There's definitely a humanitarian crisis that's happening at the border. Just recently, two of our staff members were at Piedras Negras, which is across the border from Texas. And there were about almost 2,000 migrants who were put into this abandoned warehouse. They were put in these conditions. Basically, they were locked up in there without, you know, they didn't even know. They were actually told that they were going to be given a ride by the Mexican authorities to the border. They get there and they get stuck in this old warehouse. They didn't have the right, again, they didn't have the right food. They didn't have any of the, you know, basic human needs that they needed. And, you know, it was so devastating for us to see. We couldn't help them. They wouldn't let us go in and help them. And to us, that is the actual crisis that is happening. And we're not dealing with it. In the contrary, we're, you know, the administration is creating more and more policies to make it harder for these folks to be able to come in.
And unfortunately, if he does last another 2 years, he's going to have quite a bit of time to continue to do that with, you know, Stephen Miller at his side. So over the next 2 years, assuming he finishes out his first term, what do you think that people watching this show, maybe politicians, should do to help to constrain some of his worst impulses in this area?
You know, we have been pushing Democrats. We have been pushing, and I mean, and your audience, I think, you know, has been following a lot of the work that the immigrant rights community or the movement has been doing to push Democrats to do the right thing. And not necessarily just talk about supporting the undocumented community and the immigrant community, but also to be able to push back, you know, on everything that Trump is asking. And that includes all this money. I mean, basically, they gave him all this money again for you know, DHS, for the Department of Homeland Security, that they didn't need. Yeah. They were, you know, basically just handing over all this money that they didn't need. And so we need to continue to push on Democrats to do the right thing, to not continue to give in and actually push back against Trump. If not, we're going to see another 2 years of you know, terrible policies coming our way.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because while I think a lot of people were relieved to see that there wasn't going to be another shutdown, at the time when the deal was announced, the fact that billions of additional dollars would be given, not only for building some of the wall, but for more and more security at the border, thankfully there were some representatives, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other freshman representatives who spoke out against that. But of course, it did in the end end up passing. In any event, Erica, I want to thank you for joining us and lending the perspective of your organization, who's been doing great work on this issue. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk in the future as this continues to develop.
Thank you so much for having me. Will do.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, Amy Klobuchar just had her CNN town hall last night. We'll be breaking down some of what she said after this. Last night, Senator Amy Klobuchar had her big CNN town hall just a week after announcing her run for the Democratic nomination for the presidency this time around. And it was not as bad as Howard Schultz. I will say that right off the bat. But what did it actually include? What did she go on the record on? And what did she avoid? We're going to start to break it down first with a question on, this is on four-year public college for free.
We have to do everything to help our students afford college. My idea is to make it easier to refinance. To start with your two-year degrees, the community colleges being free. That's something that President Obama was pushing. Extending Pell Grants, so it includes more students. Those are simply grants, right?
So he did ask you yes or no. Would you support free college for all?
I am not for free four-year college for all, no.
Okay, so I want to give her credit. She answered the question. I mean, that is true. There are many people who do not support that, who would have gone on the stage and tried to leave it difficult to know exactly where they stand. And to her credit, she says no, she does not support it. That is going to be a running theme for Amy Klobuchar because she came out the gate saying, I'm a moderate, I'm a centrist. I am not one of these people that's going to try to convince you that I'm a progressive. She has called herself a progressive, but she was very clear that that does not mean much in practice when she uses it that way. In fact, she said, and I love this because it says so much in just a few words, we need more than aspirational, we need serious action. Okay, so let's say we have an education crisis and people can't really afford it and people are being, you know, like swamped for the rest of their life with student loan debt. We need more than aspirational, we need serious action, like mild changes to Pell Grants and the ability to refinance, serious action. I would say we do need more than aspirational, and you're not reaching aspirational. You're not in the same neighborhood as aspirational there. I mean, look, would her changes on education be better than the current system? Sure. If she were the candidate, would I prefer her on education than Donald Trump? Obviously. But we're not there. We're in a primary. We're trying to get people fired up. We are trying to inspire people to be a part of the system. You're not doing that with this. But maybe it's just education. Maybe I'm being unfair. More important issue to a lot of voters even is health care. So let's see what you had to say about that.
What's your reservation about supporting Medicare for All?
Well, I think it's something that we can look to for the future, but I want to get action now. And I think the best way we do that is something that we actually wanted to do back when we were looking at the Affordable Care Act and we were stopped, was trying to get a public option in there. Mm-hmm. And that is a way, if we all remember that debate, that is a way to provide a public alternative that's real, even beyond the exchanges, so that we can bring down the rates. And then we can look at other options, but we have to start somewhere. And I think we can do that much more immediately.
No. We could look to things, certainly. I'm a progressive and a sci-fi enthusiast. I do look ahead. We can look to fully automated cars all over the roads. We can look to colonizing the clouds of Venus. We can look to uploading human consciousness into robotic shells to create effective digital immortality. We can do those things. We don't have to look ahead to something that many, many people across the face of the earth enjoy today. Okay, don't look to the future, look to Norway. Don't look to the future, look to every major country on the planet that already has this and more than what we're currently considering. Don't pretend that this is some pie in the sky thing when people are eating pie right now all around us. I want some pie, okay? It's 2019, I think we've earned a slice at this point. But again, I will give her the credit of she is very clear that she doesn't support it, which it makes figuring out who to support in the primary a little bit easier because there's some people that say they support Medicare for All but clearly mean something less. They mean Medicare for more, like Medicare for people 50 and over. Or they say they support Medicare for All but will they really push for it? That's a gray area. Amy Klobuchar does not dwell in the gray area. She dwells on the moderate, centrist, old school, democratic area. Very clear to know exactly where she stands on these issues. She's not hiding it. It's just up to us to decide, is this who we want? Do we want someone who is just going to, I am a centrist, I'm a moderate, I am Howard Schultz with more of a base and more of a platform, which is good, it's better than Howard Schultz. Or do we want someone who's more progressive and willing to think about bold, aspirational ideas that, again, are already all over the place? So third big issue, the most important one to me, but another major topic is the Green New Deal. Here she is.
And the Green New Deal is so important right now for our country. We may not have agreements on exactly how it will work and when we can get it done. And my point that I made there was that this is a discussion that we must have as a country. For too long, we've just been admiring the problem, right? We've been saying, oh, it's happening. And most of the members of the Senate did admit that it's happening. But what are you going to do about it? So I will, as the first day as the president, sign us back into the International Climate Change Agreement. That is on day one.
obviously. Who running? This is a serious question. I don't know, for you, for Amy Klobuchar, for whoever. Who has announced that they're running who would not sign us back up for the Paris Climate Accords at this point? How could you not have that position? It was literally insane, even for most Republicans, that Donald Trump pulled us out of that. So look, I'm glad that people clapped because it implies that the crowd cares about climate change and that's what I want. And I guess I'm glad that she would do that. But like, I don't want Cory Booker to come on stage and say, on day one, I will not go around punching everybody in the face. Like, yeah, okay, that's great, but I'm not going to vote for you based on that. Obviously, we're going to get back into the Paris Climate Accords, but that is the lowest possible bar. We need far more than that. And honestly, the more she says about the Green New Deal, although she's speaking positively, this is an area where I think, unlike before, I don't think that she does deserve a lot of credit because she is shrouding everything in ambiguity on this topic. She says, and the actual legislation you do, we know there's going to be compromises. It's not going to be exactly like that, talking about the Green New Deal as it's currently constituted. And we know we're going to have to look out for different areas of the country and how we proceed and be smart about it for the middle class and for people that are more vulnerable. We want to make this work for everyone. All of that sounds good, but I can already feel the creepers of centrist moderate narratives in that. Yes, we're going to have it, but we're going to have compromises. Yes, we can do it, but we do have to worry about the most vulnerable. No, we need to do it because we're worried about the most vulnerable. The current situation, that is what is going to devastate these communities. It is only the Green New Deal that is going to stop that from happening. Not the Green New Deal, but defanged so that it's more, that corporate CEOs will find it more acceptable. No, the less you do in this regard, the more potential threat and harm that will come to the most vulnerable communities. It has been designed in an all-encompassing fashion specifically to address those communities, while also, if you want to talk about the middle class, while also providing perhaps the single largest economic stimulus of any policy being proposed right now on either side of the aisle. Not it, but a bunch of the interesting parts taken out. It. That's what we want. And she does not support that. Now, outside of the big policy areas, Amy Klobuchar has also faced a number of concerns about how she's treated her staff. That did come up, so credit to, I guess, the individual in the crowd or CNN for allowing her to be questioned on that. But she responded to a question about her harsh treatment by saying, am I a tough boss sometimes? Yes. Have I pushed people too hard? Yes. And let me just briefly say, that was a joke on Seinfeld when people ask themselves really simple questions so that they can answer them and look really smart. But okay, she says that. She goes on to say, but I have kept expectations for myself that are very high. I've asked my staff to meet those same expectations. And the big point for me is I want the country to meet high expectations because we don't have that going now. So credit to the PR rep that was able to tell her, hey, okay, you have been really cruel and unnecessarily harsh with your staff. Make it about you having high expectations for the country. That's fine. Now, look, I'm not sitting here telling you that if she wrote some really insulting emails to her staff, you shouldn't vote for her for president. I think that's reason number 100 on anyone's list of whether they should or shouldn't support a politician. But this is a disingenuous answer. She was not having high expectations for her staff. She was emailing them in the middle of the night telling them that they are the worst, which is odd for a fully grown woman to even be using that terminology, let alone with her staff. Let alone her using her staff as her personal maids and laundry attendants and errand boys and things like that. We're not talking about gophers. We're talking about like aides that have been working in politics for a long time being treated as if they are nothing effectively, not people really. And so it's not about expectations for the country. It's about expectations for you and how you're going to treat the people around you. Again, this is not one of the most important issues, but it is something that she's going to continue to face, I would say, justified criticism on if she is going to answer it in as flippant a fashion as she did right here. Now, another big topic came up. We were just days out from the national emergency declaration there. So she responded to that saying, well, last time I checked, emergencies are things like the wildfires in Colorado. They're things like Hurricane Sandy. They're things like what we just saw in Florida. So this is unprecedented for him to declare something like that in an emergency. And that's perfectly fine. I don't really have a problem with that. I would have listed some other examples as well, you know, national gun violence and the issue with Puerto Rico that continues to this day. But that is picking, that's not necessary. She did a good job there. Overall, though, she came out with a platform that you can agree or disagree with. She has been relatively clear on all of the big issues that I think will be sort of litmus tests in this Democratic primary. That is, at this point, more than can be said for some of the other front runners or highest polling candidates. There are people who do not want to be as easy to read as Amy Klobuchar, but that might also be a gigantic downside for her considering the national political climate that we live in. Now, with that, we are going to take a break. We come back. Emma Vigeland's going to be joining us, so it should be a lot of fun on the other side of this. So days in advance of this show, we scheduled Emma Vigeland of Rebel HQ to join the show just because I like talking about the news with her. So I knew that whatever was in the news was going to be fun. But little did I know that it would be on as momentous a day as today. So with that, considering the news out there, Emma Vigeland, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me, John.
Glad.
Yeah, it's a pretty big day. Pretty big,
I would say. Look, we're gonna talk about Bernie, but I know that once we start talking about Bernie, we're not gonna stop until we've run out of time. So I want to talk about something unrelated before we get into that, and that is Roger Stone is facing charges, and he decided that a smart thing to do, legally and ethically, would be to post this photo right here. You're gonna see from his Instagram. That is Amy Berman Jackson. That is the judge in his case, and you might notice that there's crosshairs next to her head. I noticed it and she noticed it because she questioned why exactly he did that and wondered if his sort of some of the protections that have been put on him should be continued considering his social media activity. So with that image out there, what do you think about Roger Stone's legal strategy?
It's a great one, right? It's threatening the judge who will decide your fate. Good job, Roger Stone. You really have it in the bag there. The guy is a clown of the utmost proportions. I'm sure a lot of our viewers, or your viewers, excuse me, have seen Get Me Roger Stone a couple times, or like me at least. It's a crazy documentary. I definitely recommend it. He is an attention seeker, and that's all he really cares about. And I feel like his mind has been so warped by this obsession with attention that he'll do whatever it takes, including posting a basically threat to the judge on his social media. And I don't think this is going to curry any favor for him when he needs the judge to give him a ruling that's advantageous to him.
Yeah, look, I want to be clear. I want him to be judged based on the content of the charges against him, but we are primates. I would be biased if you threatened my life. Now, he says that any implication that it was meant to threaten her is false, and he did take down the image. But I would say that if you are going to want sort of goodwill extended towards you in an issue like this, perhaps don't be one of the dirtiest people in politics for half a century. That would be my advice, maybe.
And perhaps just don't post a photo of the judge at all. Mm-hmm. At all. Don't care if it has crosshairs in it. Maybe just stay away from social media. Have someone else have your social media password. I know that some problematic celebrities have done that in the past. Say, manager, take my password. Roger Stone should probably follow that blueprint, but unfortunately, he's too much of a narcissist and an attention seeker to actually do something like that.
Truer words have never been spoken. So let's turn to the big news of the day. Bernie Sanders is running for president. Emma Vigeland, how did you respond to that news?
We, of course, knew this was going to happen. A lot of people I saw were, you know, thought that maybe it was all a ruse, that he was never going to run because Elizabeth Warren and him are so similar policy-wise. But it would really be crazy if he didn't run because he is the most popular politician in the country by many metrics. Biden does beat him in some sort of polling. But this is just my instinct. I hope I'm not being biased, that I believe if Biden were to enter the race, his polling would lead would evaporate pretty quickly because he's all Obama-era nostalgia, and a lot of his former policy positions from when he was a senator, like the support of the crime bill and others in 1993, I think that they would come back to haunt him and that the lead would evaporate pretty quickly. Bernie Sanders is extremely popular among the Democratic base, despite what the Democratic elite would have you believe. So he has a built-in network already, similar but not exactly like what was the case with Hillary Clinton in 2016. She had the entire establishment lined up behind her, but Bernie has an entire grassroots organizing campaign behind him, and we all know what wins out in the end.
Yeah. Headline tomorrow, Emma Vigeland says, Bernie, same as Hillary Clinton. okay, so there has been a lot of immediate takes. I'm assuming these articles were written in advance of him running. Here are the issues that Bernie Sanders will face if he runs. And I'm going to do a video just a little bit later on addressing some of them. But I want your reaction to, he's too damn old, he's too damn radical, how dare he run. All of the issues that he is alleged to have with various demographic groups in America, that is already blanketing social media and CNN coverage of him. Although I will give them credit, they are giving him a town hall next Monday, which I did not think they would do. So what do you think about these issues that he is either facing or that the elite want you to think he's facing?
We have Donald Trump as president. It doesn't matter if Bernie Sanders will be 69 when he's inaugurated. This is not a real issue. Also, it's not a real issue when they bring it up in the context of Nancy Pelosi, who apparently were ageist with "we don't support Nancy Pelosi," but the same people who support, who aren't as supportive of her for speaker are the ones that support Bernie Sanders for president. So it's an argument that is just made to fit their narrative. And I do believe that it's going to just wash away. It's just the same stuff that they tried to throw at him in 2016, and his image isn't going to be tarnished by it. His ideas are what win out day to day and with the rest of the Democratic electorate.
So understanding that in the past, I know you've been obviously a supportive of Senator Sanders, but let's take a step back. We have 10 declared candidates, I think, already, and likely to have, you know, possibly 10 more come. With all that you know about what's going on right now, how do you think what would you evaluate his chances as in this primary?
I think he has a very good chance, and I think he should be considered the front runner. However, I do think that the pushback is going to be enormous, especially because when he ran in 2016, no one really knew who he was. He didn't have all of these institutionalized or internalized talking points against him. So he didn't have that kind of target on his back. Now, as the person with perhaps the most name recognition that's running in the 2020 primary, I do believe that he will have a lot more institutional pushback, even more than what he did in 2016, but people will be more aware of it. So I think that we have to be wary of that. My prediction, and it has been for a while, is that it will be him and Kamala Harris in the end. Although I do see a lot of bad press about Harris, and she could flame out. So I don't know, but that my prediction, I believe, still stands.
I think that's a pretty good prediction. In recent polls, it seems that she's been doing better than a month or two ago. If it does come down to the two, fingers crossed that we can conduct this thing based on policy disagreements between the two. But I think we all experienced 2016. There's going to be some narratives at play if that happens, unfortunately.
It'll be about him being a sexist and a racist, not just a sexist. Although they pulled out the race card too before.
Is unfortunate because, of course, those are massive issues. I would say probably not exclusively about Bernie Sanders or even appropriately about him. I want to ask you about a sort of related issue of other big figures in the news. Since the last time he ran, we have a new, I guess, one of the most followed people on social media in elected office, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who worked as an organizer for Bernie Sanders the last time around. I believe she has indicated that she won't be doing any sort of early endorsing of any candidate, regardless of who runs. But if she does decide to get involved, how influential do you think that her advocacy for either Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or some other candidate could end up being?
Well, I think this is fascinating because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has brought in a whole new swath of more further right Democrats in the electorate who honestly are a little obsessed with identity politics. I don't mean to use the sexism and racism accusations flippantly. I just don't think they apply to Bernie Sanders, as you said. And I think they're used cynically and without merit. But a lot of Democrats who are focused on the issues of identity, race, and gender have embraced Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, where they have been dismissive of and often very critical of Bernie Sanders when their policies are very similar. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got into politics partially because of being inspired by Bernie Sanders. So when she does endorse Bernie, and I do think that she will endorse Bernie Sanders, it's going to be a reckoning for a lot of these Democrats who don't really, I think, are more low information and focus more on identity as opposed to policies. And she says she won't endorse until the New York primary. That's a very long ways away.
I doubt that will
be the case. I think that was just kind of a way to deflect from, it was either on Face the Nation or Meet the Press, whatever question, horse race that they were throwing at her.
Okay, I need super fast answer just because what you said, I have to ask this. Because I've noticed that some people who were very against Bernie are very enthusiastic about her. If she does endorse, does your gut say that will lead these people to support Bernie more or start to oppose AOC more?
Oppose AOC more, 100%. It'll be really antagonistic on Twitter, and I will be in the thick of it.
Based on the videos I've seen of you at Trump rallies, I have no doubt that will be the case. Emma Vigeland, as always, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, John.
We're going to take a short break. We come back, a few more issues that Bernie Sanders might face and my response after this. So already, just within a couple of hours of Bernie Sanders announcing, the airwaves have been full, the blogs have been bloated with the hot takes of all of the issues that Bernie Sanders is going to face. And I would like to respond to some of them, although I know that it is irrelevant for me to do so because it will not convince anyone. There's so many zombie myths about Bernie Sanders, these accusations of him having a weakness in a certain area that when you show facts, statistical information that refutes it, doesn't really make much of a difference. And you could go back. We did a Myth of American Politics on the Bernie bro myth, and I still see that thrown around. And that's, in fact, one of the things that I want to start with, which it's not so much a criticism of Bernie Sanders that this idea of the Bernie bro is out there. Yes, it is intended to demean him and imply that he has some sort of fundamental structural issue with certain types of Americans, but more so on an individual level, it is meant to scare or shame anyone who would support Bernie Sanders. So very early on in Bernie Sanders' 2016 run, this idea of the Bernie bro came about. And the idea was that there is only one type of person that supports Bernie Sanders. This is a person who is young, who is white, who is male, probably a Democratic Socialist, and that is basically it. Now, I am sure that there are some people who use that term early on that as his appeal started to grow and as people of all different types started to like him, they realized that was no longer appropriate and stopped using the term. But many people, especially people in the media, political commentators on Twitter and things like that, continue to do so. And so I want to respond to that once again. The first issue, is he appealing only to men? Statistics would be surprised to find that out because apparently his approval rating is higher amongst women than it is amongst men. There's a lot more men that despise Bernie Sanders than women, but there's no Bernie cis meme that's going around. It's all the bros. Racial issues. Now, did Hillary Clinton get a higher share of, for instance, the African-American vote in the 2016 election in the primaries? Yes, she did. Now, that, when you break it down by age groups, is much more of a thing of older African-American voters preferred Hillary Clinton, younger African-American voters supported Bernie Sanders, but there are more older voters than there are younger voters, so the overall numbers looked bad for him in that regard. But there are many, many people of various racial groups and religious groups and all of that that support Bernie Sanders, and yet the bro thing continues. And so some people have pointed out that those people who use this term might not know that they are erasing millions of women and African-Americans and Latinos and Jews and all sorts of people who don't fit the very narrowly defined idea of a Bernie Sanders supporter. But I will go farther, because we've had this information for a long time. It is no longer the case that the Bernie bro thing is an accidental erasure of these people. It is an intentional erasure of them. If you support Bernie Sanders and you are not a white male between the ages of 18 and 25 who believes in Medicare for all, they don't want you to count in this process. They don't want your opinions to be heard. You're inconvenient to the narrative that has been spun and will continue to be spun throughout the 2020 race. And so understand that if you support Bernie Sanders, it is likely that you will be attacked in that particular way, and by proxy, so will he as well. There's much more to it. We will get to more in future episodes of The Damage Report. Thank you to everybody who watched this episode. Many more exciting guests and news to cover in the week to come. We'll see you then.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.